was where the radomes just came unglued after about 5 or 6 years. They just don't stand up. They just get batted around in the wind and the ice, and they fall apart. And the radomes actually just lift off or fray, or, you know, you get the fiberglass in your hands. It's nasty. There's no such problem with my G7144.
Is that a Cushcraft, Gordon?
The Cushcraft, or is it, no, it's another brand. Hold on, I'll go look up.
The Hustler.
Thank you. Yeah, and they don't make one, I mean, they make a G6 for the other bands. They don't make a G7, at least I don't think so. They didn't used to anyway. But they're very good. Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, as I say, let me see if I have it still. Over.
Jim first.
Apparently they're still available commercially. Universal Radio's got them over.
How much are they, did they say?
I just happened to Google it while you were talking. $209.95.
Yep. And the G6 for $450 or the G6 for $220?
Oh, I don't have that page up.
Yeah, I don't even know if they make them anymore. But anyway, it's a really good antenna. I mean, there are other ways to get that kind of gain, but they require a lot of attention to detail. You can do phased quarter waves. I mean, you know, phased dipoles and things like that, but this thing is just amazing. In fact, it's missing one of its radials, and it's still working just fine. It's got 4 radials normally. It works just great. All right. Anyway, anybody else on this subject?
A2EIR.
Wait.
2EIR.
Go ahead, Howie.
Thank you. I hate to admit that I've been listening. When I said I was listening, I meant I was listening with half an ear, so I sort of missed this. What brand, and what's the design of the antenna? It got me interested now, and you have my full attention.
I'm sorry, it's not a Taurus. What is it again, Jim?
You were talking about the Hustler, Golf 7-144, 2-meter vertical antenna.
Yes, that's right, the G7144 from Hustler. And it's just a bunch of stacked verticals. I mean, it's a phased thingy, of some sort. But I'm just saying that, you know, I put all sorts of things up, monobanders before. This one's been up for 15 years. I took a look at it a couple of years ago. It's still rocking and rolling. It's dead flat across the band. I mean, it's just marvelous. And you know, I work Simplex out to Eastern Pennsylvania all the time, with the nominal 45 watts from this Cilinco.
That sounds great, Gordon. How long is it?
I want to say it's 18 feet or so.
Wow, that's great. You're up there in the class with the commercial guys, that are, 18, 20, 22 feet, some of them. Yeah, I'm looking for something like that, come to think of it, because I got a mountain behind me and a lot of space in front of me, but I'm more or less cut off about 150 degrees or so to the north of me. So I have to, I have a peculiar setup here. My low bands, I'm great to Florida, but forget Maine and New Hampshire. On the low band.
I should also point out when I communicate with Eastern Pennsylvania, I'm not talking to, you know, Camelback and stuff like that. I mean people who are in the valleys and stuff like that, on the plains in Eastern Pennsylvania or up on the maybe just a little bit elevated, but they still have to go through the Kittatinnies and the rest of the mountain, the Arapahoes and stuff like that here in North Jersey to talk to them. So, you know, it's pretty good. Alrighty, that's a long way of answering the question about KWO 35.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out a directional. Maybe that would help, you know. But I don't have anything that I want to, you know, or that I want to cut down in effect, ruin it for ham radio use and point it south. But that idea did cross my mind.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Okie doke. Anything else on this subject from anybody?
W2JC, I sent you an email with the link for the KWO frequencies. If the station asking about it wants to email, I'll send the same thing to them. Or
I'll just add it to the contact group email.
I could do that.
Send it to contact group, but I'll append it to the email from the net. But if you want to send it to contact group, Jim, that'd be great.
Okay.
Kiddoke. Let's see what else we have here on the things to add to the list. Alright. Anybody else with anything on this subject? Either KWO35, NOAA weather stations, or high gain G7144 is another fun thing. And to VHC. Speaking about one who pays close attention to NOAA these days. Go ahead, Ken.
Okay, thank you for the mindful pause. I appreciate it. I have a question that's a little esoteric. It's the exact opposite. I'm running an FR5000 ICOM repeater, but it's configured as a simplex base. The thing about it is, I need to notch out. I'm 1 megahertz away from the weather channels, 128. Frequency in question is 161.265. I have to notch the weather frequencies away, which are a little bit more than 1 megahertz. Now you'd say, well, why don't you just put a cavity on it, you know? But it's not configured as a repeater. It's configured as a simplex base, so there's only one port. Does anybody, and I'm going to hand it over to you, Gordon, can you figure out any notch filter that is very effective to notch out the weather channel? I haven't gotten to the point where I figured out exactly what channel is bleeding into my front end, getting through my HEC, but I need to find that out, and then I can order the notch filter. I was on the phone with somebody I've known for quite a while named Dale Parfit. Mr. Parfit owns Par Electronics, and he's willing to model me an antenna, a notch filter. And he will not charge me anything until he's able to create such a notch filter that's effective. He won't make an ineffective one, in other words. So we're working on that, but I have to gather some more data. But in the interim, I wanted to know, Gordon, through your infinite knowledge and wisdom in the net here with all these beautiful ham radio operators, do you know of an adjustable notch filter even that may be able to go in line? Now, I have to transmit through it because there's only one antenna port. It's not just for receive. I'd have to put RF through it back up the coax, so it has to be able to handle 50 watts back to net control.
Yeah, I understand. So, see, one thing comes to mind is, why don't you wander one of those spectrum analyzers over and see what you're seeing. You do have a spectrum analyzer. Don't lie to me.
Yeah, we have beautiful ones. The problem is the antenna and the whole site is about 2.5 hours away, so I just wanted to see what's going on before I head out there. But I will do that. Back to you.
Yeah, well, that'd be my first thing. I know it's a long schlep, but I don't know. Anybody have any other ideas?
Anything to do with crystal filtering, is that on the horizon for you?
He's got to figure out what the source of the... Well, no, he doesn't actually have to figure out the source. All he has to do is have the frequency of his operation squared away with the crystal filter. Yeah, you could do that, but he's got to be able to pass direct power through it. So we'd have to have some sort of way to isolate it so as not to fry the crystal filter on receive.
You mean on transmit?
Yeah, on transmit. Blah, 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 blah. Rented brain cell, sorry.
You know, we had a similar issue when I was at NBC. We had a news department frequency, 161.67, and it was, you know, being not interfered with by any means. It was just being desensed slightly by the Weather Bureau, which was putting out about 200 or 300 watts. So 162.55 minus 161.67 shows you that, you know, there's not too much distance there. But we fixed it with crystal filtering, and the base station has a receiver separate from the transmitter, so all you had to do was you had to make sure somehow, I can't remember how they did it, and this is like 20 years ago, but they filtered the receiver without affecting the transmitter on the 161 side, and they were able to ignore the Weather Bureau completely and not pressure them, because after all, you know, with the Weather Bureau, as I may have mentioned earlier, was you know, first of all, the information you receive on all of these various surrounding stations in Albany and Binghamton and so on, they're all specific to those areas. Not as productive as they might otherwise be, and so you really have to go after that. To me, is the most important part. Type of thing. I'm talking about this because it goes back a long ways. And there's entirely too much, it seems to me, entirely too much politics involved in this thing. Back to you, Gordon.
Sure, very good. So, just to your point, yeah, that, you know, if KWO-35 was a broadcast station, they'd have a new site. They would be on the air, and it would not be a problem. This is, you know, the idiocy of government. I mean, the fact that government can't figure a way to get onto a building in New York City where it could efficiently deliver, you know, without interfering with the Coast Guard and anybody else, you know, accurate area weather information in the largest metropolitan area in the country is just freaking outrageous. It is just stupid. And it just boggles my mind. End of editorial, political rant, etc. The max rating for this for the G7144 is 600 watts. It is 15 feet 4 inches in height. It has a rating of 7 dB gain and uses, what did I read, stacked 5/8 radiators. So that's how it works. So and it's really an amazing thing, and it says here that you know, provides more consistent pattern even in marginal areas. That's been my experience. So it's a great antenna. Not cheap. Yes, you could duplicate it. It would be a pain in the ass to duplicate, but it could be done. If you wanted something directional and high gain, but maybe with a broad pattern, but not super directional, you could stack some Yagis, you know, two, three, four element Yagis, one above the other, and a couple, you know, maybe eight feet apart, and that would work just fine, et cetera, et cetera. So there's some other options too. I put a link into the Hustler, to a Hustler info page from HRO and some other places here as well. So I think you'll find it to be a useful antenna. Alrighty, And by the way, HRO sells it for $199.95, so it's all good. All right, anything else on this topic?
Yes, you bring up, when you mentioned gain, you bring up another sore subject with a lot of people, not just me, and that is that some manufacturers, antenna manufacturers, tend to exaggerate on their gain statistics. And the reason this comes up is because I was shopping around for an antenna for the boat, a VHF antenna for the boat, and I came up with a cell wave, and it came up with a military specification gain. In other words, you can't lie to the U.S. government. They may not know what the hell you're talking about, but you can't lie to them. You know, it's one of those things, and the lead-in wire is starting to fray a little bit, and so I gotta start worrying about that. You know, after all, it's an emergency type piece of equipment on a boat. But I just thought I'd comment on that. You know, just in other words, be very careful about when somebody talks about gain on an antenna. It doesn't matter who or what antenna you're talking about. Just back up your thought process with something that makes sense.
Okay, so assuming, I mean, they don't say it's, whether it's over a dipole or isotropic, but assuming it's isotropic, that means I would still take their 5 dB gain or almost 5 dB gain over just about anybody else's. That's been my experience, and it's really good, actually, so I think we're all right. All right, let's move on. I think we done with this topic, or anything else, John?
No, that's it for me. Thanks.
My pleasure. It was fun. I'm glad you brought it up. And thank you for introducing the topic and the subtopic and everything else. Alrighty. Let's see. Okay. Greg, you said you might have another question. KTBAR.
Yeah, sure, if we have time. The quick question, I think, is we're building a Gap Titan DX antenna, the quick question, I think, is do we need to use guy wires on that antenna? It seems to be a very tall antenna. We're putting it on top of a building. It would seem to be prudent to put some type of guy wires on there, although the documentation doesn't really say very much about that.
I would assemble it on the ground and make your judgment. It depends on the amount of wind and ice at your site. If you're putting it up on a relatively tall building where it's going to be out really in the open, I think the answer is obvious. You will want to find some way to make sure that your guy wires are secured and that you don't pull the antenna apart with the guy wires either. So you always have that chance too, right?
Yep, I gotcha. So that's kind of the way we were thinking too, err on the side of caution. We have a guy wire kit. Just I was wondering if it was necessary, and given the length of that antenna, I kind of thought that we probably should, and I think everybody else agreed to that too, but I figured I would check here.
A quick call to the manufacturer wouldn't be a bad idea. And let me ask a question. This guy wire kit, please tell me it's not metallic.
Comment. No, it's not.
Comment, go.
Thank you, Gordon. This is Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra. I own a Gap Titan antenna similar to the one that is in. I do not have the factory guy kit, so I've got it installed in a reasonably protected environment. I did attach 4 non-metallic cords to the top of the antenna and guide them off to minimize the sway in high winds, such as some of the storms that we've had. And it really is a good idea, and it seems to help. It doesn't need a lot. You can something called Mason's cord. It's a nylon twisted cord that's available at any hardware store.
Yeah, we do have a kit specifically for doing the guy wire. It's just another step in the installation that I was wondering if it was needed, and it makes sense. I think probably we should. We do have the ability to tie it down on the building, so why not, right?
I'd agree with you.
Okay. Very good. That's useful. Alrighty. Any more on this topic?
Comment,
go.
Hey, Gordon, WH6QBC. Yeah, my friend's got a 6D TV Hustler, and he had a problem in the lower part of the mast bend due to one of the windstorms, and we wound up getting a couple of corkscrew-type large tent tie-down attachments from a local sports store, and a big roll of heavier Dacron, a little bit heavier than 550 paracord. And we tied that at about halfway up the antenna, and that's kept it doing very well. The Dacron lasts very well outside. And I'm putting up some antennas shortly, and I got a couple of 100-foot chunks of 550 paracord that I'm going to use in something similar.
Very good. I actually use the nylon cord, the 550 cord. I use it in black. I get it at Camp Moore. It's cheaper than the Dacron. I know people have said that it's not as durable, but I've had it in use without a problem as long as you keep it dry and doesn't let get it all mossy and yucky. I've had it there for 10 years, and when I've had to cut it away, it's been just as pain in the ass as if it was new. So I'm sure it wasn't up to the original strength, because I know how materials age in UV and also in outdoor environments, but I can assure you it's worked out very, very well. Anyway, what else? I guess that's all I have on the subject. Anybody else?
Hey, Gordon, just, there is nylon paracord, which is non-UV stabilized. There's nylon paracord, which is UV stabilized, but how do you know which is which? And then you got the Dacron paracord, and the Dacron is UV resistant, so you're good to go.
You know, I really can't answer that. I think the paracord that I buy is the stuff you get at Camp Moore, and that's the simple answer. It comes in 100-foot lengths for $4. It comes in white, black, and camo. Or actually, it's not camo, it's OD. It's olive drab. So you got your choice, and it's $3.99 a package. And I think if you buy 10 of them, I think they discount you 10%. I'm not sure, but you can ask at the customer service counter on the way in.
I decided to stick with the Dacron base, and polypropylene is an absolute runaway from that stuff. That'll rot out very quickly, a year, maybe a little longer.
No, polypro is just useless. No. But I've had great luck. I mean, amazingly great luck with the parachute cord that I buy, and I don't go to any great extent to worry about it. It is what it is, and I know Tony came to him. I had a miserable experience with some, and I suspect he had some that wasn't UV stabilized. I suspect what I've been buying is, and I over the last 20 years, I've probably bought between, I'm going to say 600 feet and 3,000 feet in 100-foot pieces in various colors. As I say, black, white, or olive drab, from Camp Moore for years, and no problems. I just reference, when I teach knot tying, I'll buy contrasting colors to help scouts see how the knots go, so that, even something as simple as a square knot, you tie a square knot on one side with black and white cord, and had to have them take the other two ends and tie the same square knot. Those kinds of things. Anyway, it's a good way to learn your knots a little more, with a little more clarity and ease. Anybody else?
So online that do animated knot tying with different colors also, Gordon, blue and red. And that's very easy to watch. And yeah, the 550 is good stuff, and if it wasn't stabilized, it would probably be broken inside of a year or two.
Yeah, and I've seen the stuff that's clearly not stabilized. A lot of the stuff that's very colorful and attractive is that way. But I think Camp Moore, you know, but like Camp Moore has a mail order site for people who don't want to bother going there. In fact, most of their business is, in fact, mail order. They have a store in Paramus, but I find it to be, you know, just an amazing place for simple things like that. You know, consider it. I've even used simple carabiners for things, either locking or non-locking carabiners for certain things that I know just need to be outside for years and years and years. And, oh, you know, if I know it's going to be, you know, if I'm buying an antenna that I tend to put up for a decade or more, and I need it to be maintainable during that interval, but always outside and in use, you know, what's a, you know, $8, $10, $12 carabiner? It's just not a big deal. Look at the bright side. It's cheaper than maritime hardware. For those of you who own boats, you know what I'm talking about. I know Randy and John and a couple other guys have had boats, so, you know, needless to say, you know, marina-grade hardware is even more expensive, so, you know, you get by with what you got, and, you know, it's all good. Alrighty. Pardon me. Anything else?
My web research indicates that the color black is the most stable color of the UV stabilized nylon. And the regular climbing beaners are usually pretty good. The cheap Chinese aluminum beaners, they're okay. They're not strong or anything. The thing you got to watch out for them is they use steel springs, and the steel springs will rot out.
Yep. Yeah, well, rule one, don't buy Chinese climbing hardware. It's your ass that's on the line.
Now, my climbing gear is all professional grade. I don't mess with that.
Same here. Same here. I have a Petzl harness, a Petzl helmet. I have an Advent Day 2 helmet. Although I think my Petzl helmet has aged out. Still, nonetheless, I have some nice climbing shoes. And, you know, for the rock, the climbing shoes are great. For, you know, other things like climbing towers and things like that. No. I want something with a steel shank. Steel shanks in your boots are a godsend when you've got your feet on tower rungs.
W2PDQ.
Richard.
I've had real good success with this stuff from QSRadio.com, which is UV-resistant antenna rope. Buy black. Black always absorbs the UV better. That's why tires went from white to black around the turn of the century.
That is correct. Very, very good. Good point. Anything else? Okay. Well, a lot of our discussions, resources are there. Actually, I will put QSR Radio on the list as well. I'll put that in tonight's email as well for those who are on ComTech Group. Just a reference for those who'd like to be on the ComTech Group. It's real simple. It's, what do they call it? Charlie Oscar Mike, Tango Echo Charlie Hotel, Call for Romeo Oscar Uniform Papa at Yahoo Groups, you know that, or you can just email me w2ttt@att.com and w2ttt@att.net, and one way or the other I'll pick it up. If you can't find the contact group on Yahoo Groups, email me and I'll add you on. It's all good. Anybody else on this subject?
More thoughts, Gordon?
Mr. Bruce.
Yeah, for those of you that aren't familiar with nylon and Dacron and whatever, you don't cut it with a normal knife. You want to cut it with some kind of a hot knife or a hot wire. and a lot of us have old Weller soldering guns lying around. You can take off the old Weller copper soldering tip and replace it with a piece of aluminum wire is what I've been using, and I shape it the right way, and then I pound it flat for about a half an inch to an inch down towards the end, and that's my hot knife and the Weller soldering gun. It works great.
Oh, you're so much more, you put so much effort into it. You know the soldering iron bit that's all corroded at the tip and really nasty on the Weller? I leave that one in, and that's the one I use to cut wire. Cut rope.
Now, all my Wellers are the pre-tin soldering tips, and I wouldn't dare put nylon on them. I guess they'd hold up, but I've got the second cutter, and that goes through even the heavy stuff like butter.
No, I'm lucky. I have an iron that has, you know, the tip was pre-tinned a very long time ago, and it's kind of shot. It just beat to death, and so I use this for cutting rope. The other approach, if you don't want to go to all that fanciness, is to cut it with the knife. Just make sure you cut it quickly and efficiently. But they don't use a dull blade because you'll deform the binding of the kern. So let me explain. The fibers inside the wrapping, the outer wrap outside, are called a kern, and the part that's on the outside is called a mantle. Okay, hence it's called a kern. 550 cord is kern mantle, a kern mantle rope. So what you do is you then stick it in the end of your, you know, if you have a gas fired stove, you can light up the ends, and when it catches fire, what I do is I fold up some paper towel that's been wetted, and then dampen the molten rope at the end to cure it, to bond the kern with the mantle on the ends. If you don't have that, you can also use a candle, and a candle on an old cookie sheet is good, works for a surface for that kind of thing, for curing the ends of rope. And again, to stabilize it, you can simply use the method I described with the wet paper towel that's folded up.
I use a couple of wraps of floss to hold it together, and then I just use a cigarette lighter sometimes if I'm in a rush.
That works too. Comment, go.
Cigarette lighter, great for also loose threads on buttons and other clothier. Just a side comment there, especially if polyester.
It's a good choice, and by the way, you can also use those lighter sticks to use for your barbecue grills. Anybody else? That was a flurry of useful information. By the way, I'm putting the ComTech Group link into my email as well. You'll have that tonight in the email. Not there. Anyway. So, anybody else have anything for the night tonight? Into VHC. Mr. Ken, go right ahead.
Yeah, cigarette lighters are really good for lighting cigarettes. Hey, I wanted to say, I wanted to pull the handle on the Wayback Machine, man. You know, I was in a discussion with somebody on Facebook about, it's been 15 years come June that I've got my extra class license, and I distinctly remember taking a 13 word per minute test, getting the CSCE in 1999, then going to one of the first ham fests I could go to, which was in June 2000. When I sat down in June 2000, they told me that CSCE is no longer valid because you only need to know 5 words per minute nowadays, and you've already got that under your belt. I says, well, I'm lucky. They said, young man, today's your lucky day. You can take the general, advanced, and extra if you'd like. So I took all three tests and passed them in one sitting. Now, I'm not saying anything wonderful about that. The point is this. I'm on a discussion with somebody on Facebook who says, your story sounds great, but they didn't give the advanced test in that year. And I says, I know they did because I took it. Don't make me look in my closet for the CSCE back in the day. I did find all three study books that I had from the ARRL, and I tore that advanced one up. I mean, not physically tore it up. There's notes in it like my college notebooks had in it. So I know I took three tests that day. What do you think, Gordon, back in 2000? And I had to pull the handle on the Wayback Machine for that. Back to you.
Boy, you know, I don't remember when they got rid of the... Well, wait a minute. I held an advance in 99 and up to 2000. And in 2000, at the National Boy Scout Jamboree, I passed the extra. Pardon me, 2001. So that was the Jamboree that year. 2000, I was at Philmont. So anyway, go four, by the way, for those who care. So I don't know whether they still gave out advanced 2001. Anybody speak authoritatively on this subject?
W82ISC. I upgraded from Tech Plus to Extra in the year 2000. Over.
And did you take an advanced?
I believe I did. Yeah, I sat down because I already had the general theory done when I got my Tech Plus back in 76. So I remember taking two tests, and I think one of them was the advanced written, and the second was the advanced or the extra written. Over.
Okay. Very, very good. Well, there's your confirmational information, Mr. Ken.
Okay, very good. I think I took it up there and up your way, Gordon, at your club. When I was in the club, you know, I believe it was one of those sessions. And I remember distinctly they said you passed all three. Excellent. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, imagine that. It's interesting. And thank you for allowing me to pull the handle on the Wayback Machine tonight. Back to you.
WTJC?
Mr. JC?
I'm Googling my bad tonight. According to Wikipedia, the new structure was effective April 15th, 2000.
Okay. So if Ken took his exam in 99, he would have had to take an advanced. And Bob, depending on when you took yours in 2000, you would or would not have to take an advanced.
Okay, WA2IC here. I took the advanced and extra test a couple months earlier, then saved the CECE's, the local ham club, held a special session on April 15th to cash in the CSCEs to officially get the license. Over.
Okay, very good. Very, very good. That's certainly appropriate. Anybody else have anything on this topic?
Okay, I took it in June 2000, and they still gave me advanced tests at that club, I remember. Even though it went into effect in April, I still took an advanced in June, believe it or not, but I didn't have to take a code because I've already had satisfied that portion of it, apparently. But that's where it was, and this is my next part of the question. When did they drop all the code? I wasn't around when they did that. I wasn't in the country at that time. So I'm curious of when they dropped them. I could Google it, go inside and Google it, but that's what the dentist for, to have fun, talk about things. Now, I think it was weird that I remember taking that test, the advanced test, and the strange thing about it, I found it to be more difficult than the extra part. But they actually gave it to me in June when they shouldn't have, apparently. So, but that is neither here nor there now. The point is when did they drop, the new question is when did they drop the code completely? Because I was living overseas at that time, it didn't matter to me, back to Gordon.
I'm going to defer to
see. I just happened to go to that paragraph. In 2003, the ITU ratified changes to the radio regulations to allow each country to determine whether they were going, I'm going to paraphrase it, whether they were going to require Morse code. So, FCC announced on December 15th, 2006, that it intended to adopt the rule changes. And shortly thereafter, the effective date of new rules was announced as February 23rd, 2007.
There you go. I'm wondering if you, if you were picking the intended dates, and that's why these folks were taking the advance later than the action date. Maybe it had an effective date further out. Who knows? Alrighty. Have we beaten this horse to death, or are there other aspects of this topic we'd like to examine? Any stations, please call now. Yeah, this conversation was starting to go the route of the, what do you mean I can't have a printed license? I hesitate to bring that up for those who weren't there, but we can discuss the printed license issue either on the ComTech group or you can listen to a past net where we discussed it. Don brought it up. I forget when it was. It's pretty entertaining. Or we can discuss it next week. So are there any other topics for the net this time?
I got a printed license last month.
I had to ask for one.
Yes.
That is correct. They will mail you a printed license on plain paper stock. Or you can print your own, which looks mysteriously identical. Are there any differences, or are they, in fact, identical?
I'm not positive at the moment, but I seem to recall when I got it, I looked, and I seem to recall seeing something that I thought would show up if I had printed it myself. But I still preferred to have it come with the official envelope. Or...
Yep, I understand. All good. And does it still have that form factor where you have the certificate side and you have the wallet foldover thingy on the other side?
Yes, and it's do-it-yourself cut on the dotted lines?
Yes, well, it's been that way even with the old, yellow stock, or, white stock with the yellow watermark stuff, but yeah.
By the way, if the word isn't out, they've decided to stop charging for vanity call signs. Or?
Really? Why is that?
Because they figured out that it was costing them more in overhead to collect an account for the money and issue refunds when there were multiple applications for the same license call sign than they were getting in the fees. So they decided that they'd end up making money by not charging the fees.
So, we'll get you a second. So the only fee now is the normal renewal fee?
And when I renewed my Vanity Extra Class license a couple of months ago, I was not charged anything.
Oh, really? You just simply refile the paperwork and they say thank you and that's that. So they want no money at this point.
They didn't ask for any from me.
Okay, station, you want to comment?
Yeah, KM4GHN. Just saw that story this morning, actually, online. And I'm totally amazed that you, Gordon, of all people, I say that with great respect, had not heard that. Final comment. I'm out.
Well, Mr. Mitch, I respectfully take your chiding. I had heard a rumor a couple of weeks back that they were considering this. Someone said, no, there's no charge for it. I said, of course there's a charge. And I said, no. But I let it go. And I know my one son has to renew his license, so it would be wise to get that squared away. But the other piece is that, we need to you know, over the ensuing years, renew a number of vanity calls for which I am the trustee. So I am greatly relieved at the prospect of not having to pay for the maintenance of said call signs, that I can just pro forma take care of it and keep it going. So that's good. All righty, anybody else?
W2PDQ, the GMRS license has been reduced from $90 to $65 also.
It's great how private sector automation, when it finally hits the government, they actually charge less for stuff. Sorry, this is government automation because the internet was an Al Gore thing, so therefore it must be government. Government built this for us. I keep forgetting to, you know, ignore AT&T's annual report with our capital budget, not to mention the budgets of our competitors and industry guides. Anyway, enough of my rant.
Well, that I put up right now.
I'm sorry, say again? Station, say again.
As a retired New Jersey Bell lineman who put up the first fiber, you're talking over my cable right now, by the way.
Cable's been retired, my friend. Trust me. But thank you for installing the first fiber in New Jersey Bell land. Alrighty. Anything else from anybody?
Hey man, we stood there in Sears in Newport Center Shopping Mall and watched the caller ID work. That was our handwork right there. That was where it all came to fruition. And I retired because they retired our cables. And when you started putting them up a second time, I think it's time to leave. Back to you, Gordon.
Yeah, well, to Mitch's point, you know, I've been working like a dog lately, trying to do 50,000 things at once, and let me tell you something. It is so cool doing what we do. It really is. I mean, for those of us who are both business geeks and techie geeks and love all this stuff, it is just breathtaking. Sometimes it moves slower than molasses. We think, we see, we wonder. But in point of fact, when we look year over year, it's like, God, how things have changed. It really is amazing. And that's not just true in my company, but other companies, as I'm sure you know. You know, it really is amazing. All right, boys and girls, anything else? Hey, well, make sure you sign up for the ComTech group. The information on how to do it in detail is now on the email. I'm going to say 73 to everybody. We've had a two-hour net that has actually been delightful, and I appreciate everybody's interactions and lively contributions. It's been fun. Randy, I want you to know I did ring you on your mesh. I got your voicemail. I hung up on it, but I was going to ask you a question offline to see if you wanted to bring something here, but it's okay. We can save it for another day. And I also have a box of your stuff that I need to figure out what to do. So I need to get it to you sometime during the day tomorrow or get it to you next week, whichever you prefer. So anyway, it's all good. Have fun. And above all, everybody be safe. Enjoy Ham Radio. Enjoy the Barry Ham Fest this Saturday at Westwood High School in Washington Township in northern New Jersey in Bergen County. Go to a Washington Township or a town of Washington or a Washington, New Jersey that's not in Bergen County. Don't go there. And have fun. And above all, be safe. It's going to be a lovely weekend. This is K2BAR thanking the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club and Barra and its memberships for their support and interest in using the repeater and the Chestnut Ridge repeater and everything else. So take care and God bless. This is W2TTT.
KM4GHN, this is N2VHC. What's up, Mitch? You still listening?
That's funny. I was being very patient before I keyed up and called you. I've been traveling quite a bit, and been a little offline. Hadn't heard you in a while. I was going to chat out at you, but you beat me. How you been, Ken?
Wonderful, wonderful, buddy. Thanks for asking. And I'm wondering what your status is with the house and everything. It's not so easy, you know? I understand. Wonderful. Let's see, what are we doing over here? I'm at work. You know, I work Monday to Friday now. But it's okay. We got some storms rolling through here. Wow, you know, like these are storms. These are the kind of storms you go out and take photographs of. My wife is taking one tonight of a rotating supercell over our house. And then we immediately went down to the safe room in the basement. They never did blow the siren. It never did become an actual tornado. But we've had three or four of them within eyesight of the town lately. And we're dealing with it. We got a little flooding out here, not in my town in particular, but the surrounding towns. And they're evacuating people in those surrounding areas because the contour is so flat. The river widens out. It just covers large expanses of the prairie out here. So we're away from that, but that's not too far away. But except for all of that, we're maintaining the bunker here. We're good to go. Back to you, Mitch.
KD2GUW disconnected.
Well, I did 2 years in San Antonio in the late 80s, 87 to 89. I will say the craziest thunderstorms I've ever seen were in Texas, as probably witnessed very recently by the news, not in San Antonio, but nearby.
I hear you, man. I'm thinking about the last couple of years I do here. I'm going to shift my behind down Texas, or maybe even Kansas City, and work as an instructor. But that's what I have to consider, is they get hit really hard down there and heavy, you know. And up here is like the minor leagues, and down there is like the major leagues, man. We're at the very edge of Tornado Alley, and they're right in the middle of it, man, and that's terrible. Hey, did you find anywhere, did you home in on a purchase of a house yet? Back to you.
KM4GHN for ID. Serendipitously, you ask, I did look at one tonight, which I'm quite interested in, here in Dobbs Ferry. But property is very hot currently in Westchester County, and people, in my opinion, are overpaying a bit. So I'm not one of those. But this one could be interesting. Who knows? I'm definitely looking to live on this side of the river for my commute into this.
Yeah, I don't blame you, man. And yeah, since the last time we talked, there was that PTC incident down there in Philly, too. And, like, your commute, I thought about you, you know, when you commute on those Metro North trains, you know? And they just very haphazardly, you know, run these commuter rails without the proper safety equipment in line, you know? And, you know, I had found out that the New York City subway system is not considered a bona fide railroad, so they're not bound by any of the federal railroad or what they call the FRA regulations. They could just run by the seat of their pants. They don't even call the engineers that drive the conductors, or the engineers, the ones that drive the locomotive, physically propel it forward. They don't consider them engineers. They don't call them motormen either. They call them something totally different now, like train driver. But they're not considered a bona fide railroad. So the closer you live, the better off you are, in my opinion. So if sometimes you have to take a bus, you got to take a car, much better off, because you don't know when that thing's going to fly off the tracks and cause all kind of nonsense, and you get the bottleneck through the bridge. At least you're on the right side of the river. Back to you.
Yeah, it's funny. I slightly chided Gordon earlier for calling it the IRT. As a non-New Yorker, I'm probably wrong. I thought it was what was called the subway system until 72-3. Anyway, I do also take the train up, maybe every third week of the month, from New York. I'm confusing that with my daily commute on the Metro North Railroad from from Dobbs Ferry into Grand Central. Over.
Yeah, the IRT and the BMT and the IND, those were three different lines. Those were like sub, those are the subway system, but those are like, say, the National League, the American League, and the Federal League, you know, like, those are like subsets of the railroads. Like, nobody uses those terms anymore, apparently, you know. I forget what it stood for, but they all stood for something. You know, those were initials of, like, the Bronx Main Transit or something, BMT, and IRT was the Interborough Rapid Transit or something. And they all stood for something. But they had three different ones, if I remember correctly. And what I wanted to say is that BTC, it's disgusting. We put it in all of our freight. We're spending billions of dollars putting it in all of our freight lines, you know? But it's run slightly different than the passenger lines. But it's the same concept, you know? And they're spending, the railroad I work for is the leader in the technology as far as, you know, putting it in. And the other railroads are watching us. And what we fail on, they're capitalizing by not wasting their money in certain directions. But they've actually pushed the date back to, you know, be able to suit the other railroads. But my railroad is paying a lot of money to put that in to protect their freight. And not only their freight, to protect the people. We are in very rural areas, but they also want to protect the people that the trains travel through their cities, you know? Whereas I find it very crass and arrogant that places don't do it that have passenger service, you know what I'm saying? Back to you.
Well, as I'm confident you're aware, it's all economics. Boils down to that. You have a high-profile crash, people get hurt, spend money.
Yeah, that's unfortunately the way it works. Not a new topic. But,
I thought of you when I saw that story about, you know, the major buffle there on the eastern line there. But I was curious as to the two different systems, you know, how different they are, if adequate. That's one aspect of the railroad I'm not aware of.
Yeah, from what I understand, the passenger lines have it in, the ones that run purely passenger lines, they have it in the bed of the track, right? They have it embedded within the rails, sensors every couple of hundred feet, because they're not depending on a GPS technology to be able to locate the rail, the locomotive, right? Now, we're talking about locomotives that pull cars that have no motors in them. Now, there is passenger service for, like, the New York City subway, where every rail car has a motor under its chassis, or in its truck, as they call it, and every car can be a locomotive. So in other words, you can take one passenger car and it'll drive itself down the tracks. They don't have anything like that out here, or an Amtrak system. Amtrak is a dumb car that gets pulled by a locomotive. For example, when Amtrak comes out to Texas, it gets picked up by the BNSF Freight Railway, and our big orange and black locomotives hook onto it and drag those cars. It doesn't match the beautiful silver cars or whatever they are. It looks odd because it doesn't have that modern, you know, type of Art Deco style locomotive. It's a big old freight locomotive, but it's a locomotive that has PTC in it. Our PTC runs over GPS, runs over the cell network. They have redundancy in four different directions, and they use... they say satellite, they use the GPS for locating the, you know, every inch of the way along the tracks, and they also have radio frequencies they use in different bands, so one band won't travel a distance, or it goes into a different type of radio frequency area, it can go to that band. So we have many different radios inside that can handle that, and along with the different cell networks, it communicates also. So that's how ours runs compared to what Amtrak has purely for their passenger service, which I don't know why they run it the way they do. That's the odd thing about it. Ours works pretty damn good, actually. Back to you.
KC2HWG disconnected.
Roger, Ken, I take the, MNR, which is each truck has power, you know, electrically.
silver cars, but as you say, modern. The funny thing is, these Bombardier, the most modern Bombardier manufactured cars in the M&R were built in 2001. So, yeah, you know, they've been upgraded in some areas, as you're aware. But